And away we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. And we welcome you to May 1st, May Day, Wednesday, 2024. Tom Fairbanks, where has this year gone? Of course, the Run for the Roses is the first Saturday in May. So we've got the Kentucky Derby coming up here, too.
So the flowers of May are upon us after the showers of April. There's something there that I vaguely remember about April showers and May flowers.
How about the merry month of May? We are, I like that. We're off and running into the merry month of May. Buckmaster, in my 14th year of radio, doing radio here at KVOI, not the 14th year of radio for my career. You'd have to go back a long way for that, like over 50 years. But anyway, we're coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Campus, five radio stations under one roof here. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and all of my podcasts, which date back to the first week of January 2011. So we pretty much, of course, there's a bunch of shows in there that we don't put up, like best of shows, repeats. But I would say that 98% of everything we've done is there archived at buckmastershow.com. For our live line, for our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing at least one interview at 12:30 with Mitch Tobin, our environmental contributor who checks in from Colorado, talking about the Colorado River snowpack, how it might impact our water levels on the river, so important. But our live line's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, hopefully the first Wednesday of the month, we will have Kevin Dahl with us. Kevin is a Tucson City Councilman who is the current vice mayor for the city. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill.
Everything going well in the ward office?
I think it is. Though I have to say you missed one important aspect of May 1st.
What?
It's International Workers' Day.
Yes,
and so,
that's right.
Shout out to all our brothers and sisters who are working and who many of whom belong to unions.
Yeah, so that is right. That's May Day, traditional kind of a workers' day. Workers are recognized on May Day. You've revamped the newsletter that you send out. That's available to really anyone in the city, or do you have to be in your particular ward? I know I'm lucky enough to get it, and I say lucky enough because there's a lot of information there, and it's looking good. You've really revamped it.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, we send it out across the country. It's mostly focused on Ward 3, but many of the activities and information we provide would be useful to anybody in Tucson or anybody who comes here to Tucson.
And one of the, you were out and about here. The newsletter's weekly?
Yes, every Friday.
Well, you were busy last week, because I know on Friday's newsletter I saw you. You got a tour of what's been going on at the Fox Theater. You're a big fan of the Fox. The folks at the Fox have requested some city money to kind of help with sort of seed money for their expansion. That might not happen this year, correct?
That's correct. We don't have it in our budget to help with them this time. But it's a great project that they're doing. They're running a capital campaign trying to get the money they need. They've purchased the businesses directly to the west along Stone Avenue. So they'll expand to the west and make their entrance now on the corner of Congress and Stone, and go up two stories. So there'll be an additional venue for music or presentations upstairs there. And there'll be an elevator, which they haven't had in the past, and more opportunities for food services and beverages. It can get really crowded at a concert there or at a performance. And you're right, it is one of my favorite places to go. It's the one example of Southwestern Art Deco that's really survived.
And from the early 30s.
Yeah, and when it was revamped for music, they put in construction material in the big hall. Mm-hmm. It looks like concrete, and they say when artists come, there's concrete. The sound's going to be horrible. Mm-hmm. But it was a special patented formula.
Really?
That's perfect for music. And when they discovered this, when they had to do some upgrading and repairs, the company that made it had gone out of business. So they had to find the patent and find someone who could match the formula. Mm. Great place to for sound. I've really enjoyed going to concerts there.
That is the first time I've ever heard about that. That's why I do the radio show, to learn something every day. I didn't know there was some like patented formula for the acoustics.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a part of our history.
Yeah.
You know, it was the downtown theater. So many kids went to it. The Mickey Mouse Club, before there was a TV show, was a Saturday morning thing, and kids would come and watch Mickey and the Gang and sing along. A lot of our city leaders, their families, they have fond memories of going there as a, mm-hmm. as a kid. And it's a part of our history, our culture, and will take us into the future with this new expansion.
Yeah, Herb Stratford did such a great job when he was involved with kind of the early days of, yes. of kind of saving the Fox. And Herb was on the show, I don't know, a couple of months ago, talking about his newest project, which is going very well.
I haven't toured it yet. I need to go see it.
Carmen
Theater?
Yeah.
Teatro Carmen.
Thank you. Yeah. Teatro Carmen. And Herb's doing real well with that. Herb had a good idea, and he's actually was saying that somebody needs to step up and do a documentary about kind of downtown and the whole transition that's gone on with downtown.
It's amazing. You and I remember it was dead after five.
Well, people only went downtown for one reason. Well, one main reason, to visit the courthouse. They've receiving for whatever, you know, they've
for
got
good or bad purposes.
Yeah, for exactly.
Or if you work downtown at one
if
of
you
the
work
government
downtown
offices.
For government, or but if you received a jury summons, that's why you went downtown.
Yeah, and now the nightlife every night is really exciting. There's lots of venues, there's lots of music, there's lots of festivals. Recently I went to the Folk Festival, which is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. And when I was first here in Tucson, coming out here from Chicago as just a 17-year-old kid to go to the U of A in 1965, downtown was still kind of there with the
department stores,
Steinfeld's. But then things changed in 1967, I would say, 67, 68, Kevin, with Elkhorn Mall.
Yeah.
You know, so when I was here in 65, they were tearing down the El Conquistador Hotel on Broadway, and they had plans for this state-of-the-art shopping center. And at that time in the 60s, you know, you build a big shopping center and folks will come. And
yeah.
they came to Elkhorn. And I know that when I first met Ann Buckmaster in 1967, she was one of the Seal Peterson had a store at Elkhorn, and Ann was on the kind of, I think they called it the college advisory board about fashions that young women were wearing at the University of Arizona. And Ann was one of the early kind of board members with Seal in talking about young women and their fashions. But anyway, Elkhorn was what was happening, but then things changed.
Yeah.
And we had Fletcher McCusker on the show Monday talking about downtown's pretty much going to be built out as far as Rio Nuevo is concerned. But still, people don't understand. Rio Nuevo goes this miracle, well, not the miracle mile, the sunshine mile, which is actually about 2 miles, goes actually up to about Park Mall on
yes.
Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there's, you know, expansion efforts there.
Yeah, that was an interesting experiment, successful experiment, in that it was a taxing district more than mm-hmm. anything else. And so in Rio Nuevo, we get more return from state sales taxes than outside of that district. And that money is used to support the businesses that brings in more sales taxes. And it's a spiral up of development, for better or worse. I mean, some people think maybe we've gone too far with very expensive hotels and big blocky buildings, but mm-hmm. but I'm really delighted at the interaction and the culture and the life that you see downtown.
Yeah, there's very few buildings, Fletcher was saying, that are left to actually for people to acquire and then refurbish. I mean, with the Valley Bank building now, the old Valley Bank building
right.
Is now going to be refurbished. The Pioneer Hotel.
That's for sale.
Is for sale. Fletcher said the opening bid, $1.5
million. That seems cheap.
It seems incredibly cheap.
I think
cheap,
it's going to be much higher than that.
That was just the opening salvo. Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk after we talk about Mona's Danish Bakery and take the break with Kevin Dahl. Kevin, we're going to talk about just a brief thumbnail sketch of the four finalists for the Tucson City Council seat being and has now been vacated by Steve Kasachek, talking about Ward 6. But right now, Kevin, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, and they're very excited up at Mona's. They were named the top Tucson bakery by the Tucson Lifestyle Magazine. The current issue has named Mona's as the best.
Wow.
The best, and so they're very happy about that, and rightly so. They've got that new enhancement. They do have the liquor license, so you can have an alcoholic beverage with breakfast or lunch. The breakfast would probably be a mimosa, orange juice, and champagne, but a beer would be in order for lunch, certainly. Mona'sDanishBakery.com, corner, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson, Kevin Dahl, right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Kevin Dahl is here, Democrat Ward 3, and Kevin is the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson. So a lot to talk about when it comes to the special meeting that is going to be held on Monday. For folks that don't know, former Councilman Steve Kasachek, who was on the Representative Ward 6 since 2009, has gone on to work for Pima County with their project called the Mosaic. It's actually the Mosaic Quarter Sports Complex. And at the right time down the road here, we'll bring in Steve and let him talk about what he's doing over there. But right now it's probably Kevin drinking from a fire hose.
That's what I said. Yeah.
I'm using your borrowing what you said, but that's probably.
Thank you for attributing it.
Yes,
that's good for him.
You said it. All right. So we've narrowed the list of vetted down to four finalists for Steve's seat, and I know all of these people, which probably isn't a big surprise, and interviewed all of them at one time. Let's go over them, if you don't mind.
I'd be glad to, but may I step back?
Please do.
And talk about the process first.
Please.
The city runs by a charter and that's approved by the citizens, and the charter speaks to this in very general terms. When we have an opening, the remaining members of the city council and the mayor chooses the replacement. It's not doesn't go up for election. And so we're looking to replace Steve for a pretty good long time, until December of next year. So little over a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
We opened it up for applicants, and we asked people to send in a letter of interest and a resume, and whether they would plan on running again or not, because that might influence how we feel about them. And we got 12 applicants. We had indicated that we wanted to replace Steve with a Democrat, because he's a Democrat, as is usually done in other political situations.
But not required by charter.
But not required by our charter. So if we had found a great Republican, we might have done that. And one Republican did apply. Of the 12, all were invited by the League of Women Voters to a public forum, which, by the way, they've put on YouTube, and folks can see them if you want to see how people spoke and their reactions to questions, their answers to questions. Dramatically, at the end of that forum, Nina Trasoff, who was, I think, a top candidate,
mm-hmm.
Decided that there were plenty of good people running, and she withdrew her name.
Yeah.
So we were down to a few. And the procedure that we decided upon is that the six of us would do a ranked choice
mm-hmm.
voting.
Mm-hmm.
We each put in five people, with the first person getting 5 points down to the last person getting 1 point. And the city clerk chose the top four
mm-hmm.
from the points. And so, as you can see, I think it was Karen Ulick.
Yeah, Karen, former Representative Ward 3 for three terms. First elected in 2005, and then in 2017, Paul Durham won the Ward 3 race after Karen did not seek re-election. And then in 2021, Paul resigned, and Karen was appointed to complete the remaining 10 months of his term. So Karen Ulick did tell the city officials she would not run for the seat. So that's
right.
That's Karen, and kind of in reverse alphabetical order. Vince Urbago, I know Vince very well. He was a longtime fixture when we used to do our Monday political face-off. Sometimes he'd go up against Bruce Ash, and we did that on TV for years. Then I carried it over to the radio show, and then about a year and a half ago, I decided I just didn't want to start my week off on Monday with talking politics, so I now do a Monday one-on-one. But Vince worked in the Arizona Attorney General's office. He was very much involved with consumer affairs, and most recently Assistant Attorney General for the Pascua-Yaqui tribe.
That was the last time I saw him, was at a tribal council meeting.
Yeah, so very qualified. And I don't know, Vince has, well, yes, he has also said he would not, did not intend to run for the open seat in 2025. So you've got both Karen and Vince saying that they would accept this as placeholders. Then there's Ted Przelski.
Yep. Well, and I know Ted because he's Paul Cunningham's counselee, but I've also known Ted for a long time. His brother, Tom, his twin brother.
Twin.
Was in the state legislature.
Yes.
So someone joked, well, if we get Ted, we have a backup, which is not really true, but
no.
Good joke. I like Ted a lot.
Yeah.
He, his mother, Carmen Przelski,
sure.
had a column for years in the Tucson Citizen, and he is a history wonk and a soccer wonk. He writes about soccer. He's a member of the Writers Union. He knows the city. Well, all of these people have good qualities. Ted stands out for me because he has been so involved at a staff level in city council matters. So
right.
he can just step into the role and be completely up to date. But they all have you know, Karen's experience. She has such a great manner, and she works with all sorts of people.
Mm-hmm.
Vince is brilliant and brings that legal point of view and skill. And who's our fourth? Oh, Pamela Powers.
A former state legislator. And I do want to say, Kevin, that Ted has said he's offering himself as an interim council member.
That's right.
So indicating he would not go for the seat. Now, Pamela Powers, former Arizona House representative from 2017 to 2022, she told the Arizona Daily Star, and I've Charles Borla, I have his article in front of me, and she has said that she's undecided about running for the seat in 2025, but she's sounds very qualified. I've interviewed her a number of times. Not only does she have committee experience at the legislature on state banking and insurance, commerce, and she's also a writer of health matters for the American Journal of Medicine. So these are
they're all very
they're
good.
Four qualified people.
Yeah, we. So it's fractions it's, of, and we have to think about. What are we looking for in this position? And before I go on, let me say that the other applicants had all sorts of positive qualities too. And no one should feel bad for not making this final cut. All of us had different reasons for how we ranked people.
Yeah.
When I sent in my rankings, I described that that I was looking for experience. I was looking for smarts. I was looking for congeniality. And I was also carefully looking at all the recommendations that people emailed us and wrote letters to the editors. I was trying to weigh what the public thought of folks as well, mm-hmm. and especially residents of Ward 6. This is a person that's going to represent them, and Ward 6 is our city's core, solidly Democratic. Neighborhoods are very active. There's lots of issues. And Steve took on lots of great projects, too.
Well, yeah, we haven't even talked about his recycling,
that's right.
Bifusion project,
yeah.
which is continuing on.
It is continuing
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
As an aside, we've contracted with Bifusion to build a factory at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus, our landfill. And so in a year, we'll be able to do a lot more plastic recycling through that, too. But I also want to note for your listeners that Hefty...
The Hefty bag people?
Yeah, are now doing plastic recycling nationwide, and it's available in Tucson.
Hmm.
You buy from a store a bag of orange-colored Hefty bags that are designed for recycling, fill it up with your plastics, and preferably not the plastics that you can recycle in the blue bin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the milk jugs
yeah.
and the water bottles go in the blue bin, but everything else, plus styrofoam, which wasn't available under the Bifusion.
You can fill the bag with styrofoam?
You can. They have national markets for styrofoam and all the other plastics that they'll collect. Unfortunately, you can't throw it in the blue bin. You have to put it in one of the four bins, the orange bins that we have for plastics, hard to recycle plastics.
And where are those?
Well, one's at the Ward 6 office,
yeah.
and you can go
right off Speedway.
Yeah, and then there's three others. You can go on the website. I don't know
okay.
them offhand.
Back
to our candidates.
Yeah, back to the candidates. So it kind of sounds like you're leaning toward Ted Przelski.
Of these four Teds?
Yeah, you said that he is console ready.
Yeah.
You didn't say that, but I'm saying it.
I think that's
kind of that was your feeling. That
that's a good phrase.
Yeah.
But all of them are relatively council. So it's subtle in the decision making, and we're a fairly congenial group that we will be discussing in May after hearing people speak again, and we'll ask them to answer a couple of questions. So Ted's not hard and fast for me. I want to hear what my colleagues have mm-hmm. to say about others.
And that meeting is a week from, well, the meeting is this Monday.
Monday.
Special meeting, right?
Right. Just an hour long, I think.
Hour and a half. Yeah. So I wonder if the pay, change in the pay also is kind of an incentive.
Well, when Paul, when the council had to decide on Paul's replacement, there were three people who applied. I was one of them, Karen Ulick and Bonnie Poulos applied. So we more than quadrupled to 12. And I think it will be an interesting election, too.
Yeah.
And I think there'll people, I think the pay makes sense now.
Yes. All right. Any final thoughts about Ward 3? You do the cooling centers.
We do, in the office. We do, but hey, let me throw in StinkNet.
Real quickly.
StinkNet. There's a new invasive species. Go online. The Arizona Sonoran Desert Museum is leading the charge to rid our community of this.
It stinks.
It's fire prone. It takes over and crowds out natives, and it's hard to get rid of once there's a bunch of them.
In other words, we thought buffalo grass was hard to get rid of. This one's like buffalo grass on steroids.
It is. We have an opportunity as one or two show up on a lot to get rid of them now.
Mm.
Thanks,
okay.
Bill.
Okay, when they dry out, watch out, right?
They burn fast, and the fumes are dangerous.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Stinky.
All right, Kevin Dahl, thank you very much, Kevin. Hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Bill.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to the Vice Mayor, Kevin Dahl. Kevin will be coming in on a regular basis. We used to bring in Steve Kasachek when Steve was on the council the first Wednesday of the month, but we'll be bringing in Councilman Steve or Kevin Dahl to be with us the first Wednesday of the month. Coming up on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our environmental reporter, Mitch Tobin, will be checking in from Colorado on the snowpack, which is so critical to the Colorado River. That'll be coming up at 12:45. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, Green Things 13-acre site, home to Zocalo. All that wonderful pottery from Mexico and Latin America, some beautiful things from Zocalo. So bottom line, Green Things has everything you could imagine for your garden. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business over at Green Things, and they're open daily. Bill Spurbeck is a longtime friend of mine. Bill runs CPRTU, and Bill joins me now in studio. Bill, how are you?
Good. Everything's good.
I want to talk a little bit about pool season, and so many people need to learn CPR before the hot weather comes up. Is it a difficult process to learn it?
No, it actually takes about two and a half hours with adult, child, and infant CPR, and it's a two-year certification from the American Heart Association.
How did you, how has things changed? Your many years as a paramedic, did the whole process of CPR administration change during your career?
Yeah, so I started teaching, 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, you'd go to actually the Heart Association office, pick up mannequins. People would book classes through the Heart Association, teach CPR. At that time, it was an eight-hour class. And over the years, every 5 years, the Heart Association comes up with new guidelines, new standards. So next year we'll find out what the new guidelines are, but it's gone from the 8 hours to about 3 hours over the time.
Mm-hmm. The big difference was originally when you were learning it, you would actually put your mouth on the individual who you were resuscitating, correct?
Yeah. So back then, we knew nothing about bloodborne pathogens. A quick funny story is when I was in paramedic school, one of the things we do is we do the oral intubation, put the breathing tube down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing my ride-alongs, and the very first one I did, I put the tube in, and then you're supposed to use the bag valve mask, the AMBU bag.
Yeah.
Well, I was so excited, I went down and breathed down a tube. I didn't get in the trachea, I got in the stomach, so I got vomited.
Oh my gosh,
it came
Bill.
All back up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Into
up until probably the middle 90s,
We'd
start wearing gloves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only time we'd put gloves on before that was if it's a massive bleeding type of situation, but it wasn't, we didn't know about bloodborne pathogens.
Mm.
So things keep evolving as far as, protection and things.
And then from the mouth to mouth, it evolved into a song keeps popping up in my mind.
Oh,
Staying Alive.
Yep, Staying Alive.
Staying Alive. Yeah.
Another One Bites the Dust.
Another one. And where we're going with this is the talking about compressions.
Correct.
Tell our listeners, and it is hard, I understand, on the radio, but describe how CPR now works.
Okay, so medical professionals will still use the bag valve mask or the little pocket mask.
Uh-huh.
The lay public, we teach them compression-only CPR, which was actually started here at the Sarver Heart Center.
Dr. Avey, as I recall,
yeah.
I remember interviewing him on my TV show when this was first coming on, and he was an early pioneer in this, and at first it was kind of poo-pooed by the medical community.
Yeah, it was, and now it's kind of the standard for the community.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found out that there was oxygen still in the blood.
Okay.
It just wasn't being moved.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, the biggest reason people did not take a CPR class or do CPR is because of that mouth-to-mouth guideline.
Yeah.
So now it's... And now you don't even check a pulse.
So what do you do?
If they have no breathing or they have agonal breathing, which is kind of deep, irregular breaths. Yeah, like that. You can hear it's kind of like a snoring nose. Then you start CPR. But if they are breathing regularly and normal, then you don't do the CPR.
Okay, so hand goes.
Okay, you got your bottom of your palm goes right between the nipples on the sternum.
Yes.
And then you put another.
You put your other
hand on top of it. Yep. And an adult, you press 1.5 to 2 inches in depth. For they like it between 100 to 120 compressions a minute.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, I don't care how great a shape you are in.
Yeah.
In 2 minutes, you're going to be tired.
Yeah.
Sometimes the adrenaline kicks in and you can go a little longer, but yeah. And so the quicker we identify the cardiac arrest,
but you've
the
seen,
better outcome.
You've seen it.
I've done it hundreds and hundreds of times.
And you've revived people.
Yes.
Yep. It works.
It works.
Yeah.
In fact, the resuscitation rates have gone up over the last 8 or 10 years because people are starting CPR. You know, you'd call nine. People think that you call 911, the truck is going to be there in 2 or 3 minutes. The reality is you're going to be on the phone with the dispatcher for about a minute to a minute and a half.
It's true.
And then they dispatch us, which we normally takes up to a minute to leave the station.
Yes.
So it's 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
And depending upon where you're located at and traffic and stuff, it could be another 4 to 5 minutes before we get there. So quite in the past, quite often people have already been deceased, but we're seeing a better resuscitation rate now in the community.
I recall on Facebook you were posting about in your career you've actually administered, and I don't know if it was CPR, I won't even ask you to go into details, but quite a few celebrities.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I won't ask you what their particular... Go ahead.
So Paula Abdul...
Paula Abdul...
took care of twice.
Here in town?
Yeah, she's at Canyon Ranch drying out.
Oh, yes. Alcohol rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Rehabilitation.
So I took hold of her twice. You know, she's only about 4'10". And she got hold of some alcohol and was drunk. And so I get back in the ambulance and she starts kicking and thrashing. And I went back like 6 months later, same thing. I told her right before I even put on the gurney, I said, you're not going to raise your feet to me.
Jeez.
So she was polite. So Lee Marvin.
Yeah, because Lee used to have a home here in Tucson.
I probably took care of him.
What was his issue? Do you recall?
He's got emphysema.
Okay.
Yeah, he had really bad emphysema.
Okay.
Joe Bonanno?
Sure.
The Godfather?
Yeah.
So it was funny. I took care of him probably 15, 20 times.
Really?
Yeah. And so
called
one day,
out to his house here in Tucson?
Yeah.
15 or 20 times.
Yep. And so I went home one day and my dad was sitting at his breakfast counter reading the paper. And I said, what's Joe doing on the front page? My dad goes, this guy? I said, yeah. I said, do you know who he is? I said, no. Well, my dad grew up in New York at the time he was running the mob back then.
Then you're saying, oh, gosh, I know this guy because
Yeah, he's always very nice. And what it turned out to be is he would go to the hospital a day or two before his court hearings. Push him back.
Yeah. Wow.
I took care of Dom DeLuise and Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. Burt made some movies out here.
Yeah, they did the Cannonball Run.
Yeah. How long were you a paramedic?
Right now, I just recertified. This is going in my 41st.
Oh, you did recertify, yes.
Going in my 41st year.
Okay, Bill, we're quickly running out of time, but I do want to talk about CPR to you. Tell our listeners about your business.
Okay, we're an American Heart Association training center. We also team up with KVOA for Swim Fest each year. And so we give free community classes. You'd go to our website and click the Channel 4 News icon, and you can sign up for a CPR class. And the website is cpr2u.com. CPR, the number 2, the letter u.com.
And it's been a successful business, right?
I mean, we're doing, last year we did just over 15,000 students. We're the largest training center in Arizona.
Is it kind of a hybrid, or is this something around the country other places have?
Yeah, no,
this particular model, this business model.
This business, I don't know how
Yeah.
I know we're bigger than a lot of organizations because typically people teaching CPR are like off-duty firefighters or nurses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they might do a class once or twice a month on it. But, I had just looked at our enroller, which is our software program,
mm-hmm.
where everybody registers and keeps numbers. I just looked at it 2 weeks ago, and just CPR, because we also teach advanced courses for doctors and physicians and mm-hmm. stuff, just CPR. We started in 2013. We're at just over 77,000.
Over 70,000 people have taken a lesson.
Yep.
Wow.
I mean, some of those are repeats.
Of course, every but 2 years. Congratulations. That's a huge service for our community.
So think about, 70,000 people. How many lives have we actually saved?
Yes.
I know it's got to be into the hundreds.
Yeah,
over
for sure.
The years,
if you've saved even one life, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Bill Spurbeck, always a pleasure to see you. You're a dear friend, and we've known each other a long time. And appreciate everything you do in the community at CPR to you.
Thank you.
And for your service just mentoring people and about business and trying to mentor younger people.
Yeah, I love that.
I know you do. All right, Bill, thank you.
Okay.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Mitch Tobin, environmental reporter, next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We send a lot of our listeners over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Once you get there, you're going to say, hey, it's cooler over here. It's 75 degrees right now over there. In the summer, 10 could be 15 degrees cooler. It's all about elevation. It's 5,000 to 7,000 feet, only about a 3-hour drive. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. find out about all the opportunities to hike in the Gila National Wilderness, and some great places to stay and great places to eat as well in historic Silver City. Our contributor on the environment is Mitch Tobin. We try to check in with Mitch at least once a quarter. Mitch is the co-director of the Water Desk. That's an independent journalism initiative based at the University of Colorado in Boulder at their Center for Environmental Journalism, and they focus on Western water issues. Of course, the Colorado River and the Rio Grande are two areas of particular interest. Mitch's latest project is a free newsletter. This is a lot of fun. It's called Snow, S-N-O-W, Snow News. There's a lot you can talk about, it turns out, when it comes to snow. Mitch, former environmental reporter up in Napa, Tucson citizen, Arizona Daily Star, author of Endangered Species, which shows why so many species are at risk. He joins us from his home base in Colorado. Are you in Durango today, Mitch?
Yes, I live outside of Durango, and that's where I am.
Well, it's good to have you. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. So what are we knowing, or what are we learning here now as we begin May about the snowpack in the West?
Well, it was an interesting year as far as the snowpack. It didn't start out so well in many places throughout the region. But we did have a nice rebound in a lot of places, not everywhere. A lot of atmospheric rivers came in, and California, which was having a really lousy start, wound up having about an average year in terms of the snowpack. Places like Colorado were also close to average. Utah was a little bit above average, but portions of the northern portions of the region, Washington State, Montana, were very dry, in some cases record low conditions. So overall, it was a decent year for the snowpack, especially if we want to just concentrate on the Colorado River Basin. But it certainly wasn't like last year, which was a real record year in some locations, and really helped in terms of runoff and trying to replenish these reservoirs that have been so depleted. So we're not expecting a real huge amount of help from this year. And something that we've seen in recent years is even if we have about an average snowpack, it doesn't necessarily translate into an average runoff or stream flow. There's a lot of ongoing science to try to figure this out. Some people think it has to do with a deficit in the soil moisture because it's been dry. Other people are pointing to these rising temperatures, which increase the evaporation rate. Snow can also disappear even before it becomes snow melt. It can do something called sublimate, where it transitions from being a solid to a gas, and then it floats away in the atmosphere, and we don't see that in streams and rivers and reservoirs. So overall, it was a decent year, certainly nothing like last year. It wasn't the kind of banner year that would really help the reservoirs like Lake Mead and Lake Powell recover in a significant way.
Mitch, as you know, and you lived here in Tucson, you know that it can get very hot here early in the year, and luckily that isn't the case this year. We could be really hot, could have some really hot days even in March in the past here in Tucson, and we were right on average within a day or two, Mitch, of hitting 90 degrees for the first time, and luckily we haven't hit 100 degrees. And we've had a delightful, in my 36 years here, I think it's one of the most delightful winters and early springs that we have had. So hopefully that trend will continue into the summer, because something we do need to talk about with snowpack, it's a lot about temperature, isn't it, Mitch Tobin?
It is. That's something that's really become clear to me as I've looked into the research and scientists. And you think of snow in the snowpack, and naturally you think about precipitation, and obviously you need to have snow for there to be a snowpack. But really, temperature plays this huge role, because if it's not cold enough, it will rain rather than snow. And if it's warm enough, the snow doesn't stick around. It melts very quickly. It evaporates more rapidly. The ground is clear of the snow earlier in the season, so the plants come up, and then they suck up the water and transpire the water through their leaves. And so, you know, snow is very much about precipitation, obviously, but you can't forget about temperature. And given that the planet is warming because of climate change, this has become a real central theme, and that the researchers are looking into the future and seeing that there are going to be major problems with the snowpack. Simply, if you just look at the temperature increases, precipitation is harder for people to model and project in terms of what's going to happen. But there's a very, very clear, strong signal that it's going to get warmer. And, you know, it's common sense that hot weather is not good for snow. And so that has a lot of people concerned that even if the precipitation total amount is the same, or even if it's a little bit higher, if it comes as rain rather than as snow, that really messes up the system, because the snowpack is the biggest reservoir we have, and it stores water up there in the cold season and then gradually releases it during the warmer months, which is important not only for farms and crops, but also for places like Tucson and many other cities that depend on the snowmelt for the water supply, because the Colorado River is predominantly snowmelt.
The levels of our reservoirs here in the Southwest, will they change much because of what you had already articulated looks like a pretty much average year, Mitch Tobin?
So the reservoirs, you know, go through a sort of cycle during the year, and as the spring snowmelt comes in, they tend to go up. But this isn't going to be a real big year in terms of recovering, and you have to view this year, or even this year and last year, which was such a banner year for the snowpack, in the context of a very long mega drought, which is how scientists are referring to it. It goes back all the way to the year 2000. And so this is one of the driest periods we've had in the last couple thousand years. And so there's a lot of deficit to make up in terms of the dropping of the reservoir levels. So, you know, if we had a winter like we had last year, this year and next year, and maybe the year after, you know, then you would see a significant rebound in the reservoir levels. But an average year is not really going to do much for us at this point.
How can people subscribe to Snow News, which I really enjoy getting via the email? It's fun. You even talked about snowflakes, one issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. That's great to hear. You can just go online. It's www.snow.news, and it's a totally free newsletter. I'm writing a lot about the snowpack and the connection to the water supply, which is obviously very critical, but also other things. You know, as you mentioned, where do snowflakes, you know, how do snowflakes form, the science behind that. There's a lot of other connections, not only to water, but biodiversity, forest health, recreation. And just economically, snow is a real important thing, certainly in a place like Colorado, but in many other places as well.
Like Minnesota, where they didn't have any snow, enough snow anyway, that they had to cancel their annual snow festival this year in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad year. I mean, people talked about it being the lost winter up there. And here in the West, the northern tier states, had a terrible year as far as the snowpack. Washington State just recently declared a drought emergency. So it'll be interesting to see how the summer shakes out in that part of the world. And, you know, you think about things like wildfires. Yep. The snowpack tends to keep a lid on it. And the less snow we have, the more likely there are to be catastrophic fires.
All right, Mitch Tobin, always a pleasure. Thank you, Mitch, for checking in.
Thank you, Bill. Care.
All right, Mitch Tobin on the live line, brought to us by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mitch on the live line from Durango, Colorado. On behalf of Mitch and Tom on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill. We wish everyone well.